Well, hi, and I want to thank Justin once again for keeping everybody entertained on a quiet, what could have been a quiet prequel to the American Hit Radio Hour. Very cool. Instead, we're sitting here thinking about Jetsons, the name of the dog and the name of the maid and the theme song and stop this crazy thing. Very cool. Lots of fun. Thank you, Justin, for that. Welcome to American Hit Radio, though, for the next hour. Heidi and I are here live, just doing what we always do.
We're doing it to you every Wednesday and Friday.
You got it. Wednesdays and Fridays. Wednesday, of course, the American Hit Network or American Hit Radio part of our program. Lately, we've been doing a count up, so to speak, through what we're calling the top 500 of the top 40. 500 albums that we've picked that we consider to be the best albums that have made it onto
the top
40 charts here in America. We started in 1964, and I think that this is our last entry for the year 1964. Might be one more. I'm not positive.
Just have to think that about that.
Well, you know what? The next one that I think we've got to do is Beatles 65. And the reason they called it Beatles 65 is because it sounded new and hip because it was December of 64 when it came out. So I think next week will be the last
one. It was technically 64, though.
Oh, speaking of technically,
not
we
even
started
technically.
This in January of 1964. And we've covered 10 albums already from the year 1964. This is album number 11 out of 500. And what we're going to spend the next hour playing, for your listening pleasure, I hope, is the second Rolling Stones album released in the United States, an album called 12 by 5. It's kind of cool in a lot of ways that this album existed here in the States because it was an exclusively an American album. There was no British counterpart to this record, which you could think to yourself, oh no, Shades of Beatles, like the Beatles' second album, or something new. Every time I've played a Beatles album in this series, and so far I believe we've played four of them,
mm-hmm.
we have to spend half of the show talking about how unbelievable of a hatchet job the record label did to the Beatles stuff. But that's not true. Somehow the Rolling Stones managed to avoid the same indignities that faced the Beatles in regard to American releases. Like when Capitol basically ripped roughshod right through the Beatles album catalog, London Records, the Rolling Stones label, displayed common sense, in my opinion. If anything, the Rolling Stones benefited from label intervention here in America. And this album, 12 by 5, is like a really good example of that. Now, here's why. In England, the Stones followed their debut album. Over there, it was just called The Rolling Stones, and it was just a picture of them standing sideways. It was a bit radical because it didn't have any words on the cover. And I was like, oh, you can't do that. And so it was kind of a cool thing to do. After a while, everybody was doing it. But that was their debut there. And in America, they used the exact same photo. But of course, in America, they put words on the cover to say England's newest hit makers. And we covered that album maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. That was one of the 11, one of the 10 that we've already covered. Well, anyway, in England, they followed that up with an EP, an extended play that was entitled 5x5. It had 5 songs on the EP. There were 5 Rolling Stones, thus
right.
The title, 5x5. Now, an EP, it's weird that a lot of Americans don't even know what that is. Well, maybe now it's not so weird.
Well, now they're pretty common.
Some people don't even know what an LP is anymore.
This is true.
Or 45, 7-inch, whatever. But an EP generally was a 7-inch record that you would play at 33 RPM. You'd play it at the slow speed, which allowed you to put at least 2 songs on each side, or in the case of the Rolling Stones EP here, 3 songs on one side, 2 on the other. Now, the reason that EP came out in Great Britain the way that it did and why the Stones wanted to rush release it is they had done a tour of America before anybody really knew who they were. It was not a Beatles situation for the Rolling Stones. They
right.
were not
yeah,
having
were
people falling
unknown
over.
Unknown entities.
Right. People were not jumping in front of the airplane and wherever they landed. But it wasn't a total loss either. They were definitely building an audience. And one of the highlights of the trip for the Stones was that they went to Chess Records in Chicago. Basically the home of their heroes, Chuck Berry, Muddy Waters, my God. Think about Keith Richards and his infatuation with Chuck
all
Berry.
All his heroes were there.
Right. And of course, like I said, Muddy Waters as well. So they were able to record while they were at Chess. And I think they put down five songs. So they took those five, and when they came back to England, they released them immediately on an EP. Like, oh, here we are. We're so cool. We recorded at Chess Records in Chicago, man, you know, home
yeah,
of the
all
blues.
All their fans that that love them because they were a blues band, we're going to love them even more.
Right. I mean, they basically had the real experience of meeting their heroes, playing in the same room where their heroes played. It was a big deal. And in England, at this point in time, just for what it's worth, I mean, the Yardbirds was one group that was releasing nothing but blues. Around the same time as this record came out, the Animals released their debut album. Besides the House of the Rising Sun, the entire album is blues stuff. Baby, Let Me Take You Home, Talking About You by Ray Charles. Two Chuck Berry songs on the Animals album, Around and Around, Memphis, Tennessee. Even the Kinks started out as a blues band on their first album. The Kinks also, very little in the way of originals. Ray was still pretty much, you know, getting his act together, learning how to write. Don't get me wrong, You Really Got Me is on the debut album, which is one of the best hits of all time.
Right.
But it, you know, it's filled out with songs like Bo Diddley's Cadillac. And again, another Chuck Berry song, Too Much Monkey Business, things like that. So everybody in England was going blues crazy, R&B, emphasis on the B, nuts in England. So the Stones got a bit of a heads up on everybody, or they got a lead.
Leg up.
Yeah, leg up. Thank you. That's the exact word I'm looking for. By getting to play a Chess. So in America, they didn't want to put out the EP. And long story short, the label was smart. They said, if we put out an EP, it's not going to sell. Nobody buys that sort of thing here. So they took the EP. They added the Stones' recent singles, A-sides and B-sides. And they had a few things that they were working on in the studio that were new. So they took three of those songs as well. And they created a really good 12-track album. Like I said, so,
thusly 12 by 5.
12 by 5. Exactly.
See, we finally got there.
Yes, you finally did, didn't we? So that explains it then, doesn't it? And not only that, it's a 12-inch record. You know,
yes.
All these things that were like
implicit. It sounds dimensional.
Yes. Now, like I said, the other thing that's really great about it, though, is that it's a full logical album.
Thick.
This predates before Jagger and Richard being hit songwriters, but there's still some cool stuff on here. The album opens with, guess who? A track written by
Keith?
Chuck Berry, of course.
Keith Richards singing?
No, but with Mick singing and, of course, Keith in full Chuck Berry worship mode.
Okay.
It's a great version. It's called Around and Around.
I said the joint was rocking. Going round and round, yeah, reeling and rocking, what a crazy sound. And they never stopped rocking till the moon went down. Well, it sounds so sweet, I had to take me a chance. Rose out of my seat, I just had to dance. Started moving my feet, oh, the clap of my hands. I said the joint was rocking, going round and round. Yeah, reeling and rocking, what a crazy sound. And the never stopped rocking, down the moon went down. Suspect. And when the police knocked, those doors flew back. But they kept on rocking, going round and round. Yeah, reeling and rocking, what a crazy sound. And they never stopped rocking.
It's amazing to think how incredibly popular Chuck Berry had become in 1964 in Great Britain. He was experiencing a resurgence in his career around this time. I mean, the Animals have that exact same song on their debut album, which was released maybe a month before this album by the Rolling Stones.
That's pretty crazy.
Right. The Kinks had a song by Chuck Berry on their album, on their debut album. The Beatles did Roll Over Beethoven.
I wonder how much that had to do with the record company's influence.
As far as covering Chuck Berry?
Yeah, saying, you know, like, this is what you can draw from.
Really, there was be no reason for that. There was no affiliation because Chuck Berry was on Chess and all these other artists are on British labels. And then getting released on American subsidiaries. So there was definitely no financial reason for them to want to be doing, wanting any of these bands to be doing Chuck Berry. It's also interesting because at this point in time, Chuck Berry was just finishing up doing about 2 years of his sentence
for the Mann Act thing.
So he was gone but from 62 until 64.
Well, I guess I figured they could get his work inexpensively then.
You don't even know if that's the case. It just must have been weird for him, I'm thinking, to come out of prison and find that, you know, you're one of the hottest
commodities. All the kids are playing your music, but not
nuts.
By you.
Right. This is why it was in 64 Chuck Berry released his own album called From St. Louis to Liverpool. Obviously, a nod to the Beatles.
Of course.
And that album was more or less a collection of some of his own 45s that the label had, you know, had been putting out in, you know, when he was in prison and other, I guess, some newer work. But the point being that Chuck was huge. And I would say the main reason Chuck was huge, of course, you got to give a lot of credit to the Beatles for their version of Roll Over Beethoven. But the Rolling Stones just were relentless. Their debut single was a Chuck Berry single. He wrote songs on the first album, and here he is writing the leadoff track on their second American album. Keeping moving things right along then, though, the next track, of course, would be a blues song. I believe this is one of the songs that was recorded at Chess Records. It's called Confessing the Blues. We'll be right back. Now you could be playing this album for the past, how long has it been out now? 52 years now since the album is released. It's that old.
I think you can still feel their youth and exuberance, though.
That's exactly why I wanted to include it. I mean, I still think there's a cool energy on the record.
Yeah.
And what's cool about it for me now is, like, by doing just a little bit of research, you get this angle on the record that I didn't even know. I mean, here they are, like, you can imagine how happy they were being in Chess Records these English kids, you know?
How thrilling.
We were just talking about this, but I'll bet you that they still, to this day, would probably think that that was probably one of the happiest days of their life. You know, a real dream come true for them. And the first two songs on this album were both recorded at Chess Records, and it's them recording songs by their heroes who recorded at Chess Records. You know,
absolutely. You can't ever lose that feeling, I don't think.
Yeah, I think that you basically, like, I think it's like what John Lennon once said, like, the, you know, when he first met Chuck Berry, his first reaction was, "It talks." I'm sure
that's awesome.
You know, the Stones probably felt the same way, you know? It's the way you get, you know, dumbstruck when you meet somebody famous sometimes.
Yeah.
They must have had that. But here they are, they've actually transcended that. They're recording a Chuck Berry song in the same studio where Chuck Berry records. That's kind of like...
Oh, it's beyond cool.
That's like incredible. Like they were not shy about it. They did a good job. That last track, Confessing the Blues, was a Little Walter song. Little Walter, his home was Chess Records.
Right.
So, you know, here they are in front of these guys saying, yeah, we'll do it. Mick Jagger's playing the harmonica on a track that's a Little Walter song. I mean, it takes a lot of chutzpah. You've got to really feel as though you've got something in order to do that with a degree of confidence.
I guess.
Especially on American turf. It's incredible. This is why I think that, I didn't pick the Animals debut album to make my list. I didn't pick the Kinks debut album to make my list. Both very good R&B, debut albums. I didn't pick the Yardbirds debut album. The Stones are the ones with the most credibility at this point in time for this stuff. Now, they recorded one original song. When the Stones recorded originals or made up stuff, it was like a band credit. I think we talked about this when we did the last album. They gave the songwriting credit to Nanker Felge.
Right.
Silly made-up name that really meant that the five Stones were sort of jamming and making something up in the studio as they went along. So when they were at Chess Records, this is one of the things that they had jammed on. While they were doing it, Mick began to improvise some lyrics, and that became the title. The song was called Empty Heart. somewhat formless song, really, jamming on essentially one chord and eventually coming up with the title Empty Heart, because Mick keeps repeating that phrase over and over again. The part that's the most amusing to me is Keith improvising the background vocal bit, that falsetto thing that he's doing in the background.
That's hysterical.
Really funny. A bit ridiculous. Now, I had said that what the record label did, London was the name, of course, of the American affiliate that was releasing the Rolling Stones records in America, London Records. And what they had done here, since they had, besides the five tracks, they had to pull out seven. So there was a single that the Stones had released in England. Said, okay, good. It's not on an album. Of course, why not? So they threw it on this album with the B-sides. Here is that single. Now, what's interesting about this is that there's actually two versions of it. The version that made the album is actually different than the version that became the hit. When the Rolling Stones started releasing their greatest hits collections, they did not use this version. So it's actually, I think this version is relatively rare and maybe only available on the album 12x5. Here is then the organ intro version of Time Is On My Side. I don't mean to be picking on Keith,
but
the background vocals on that are hysterical.
But here you go.
Every time he sings, is on my side. He's in a different range, a different line, not even really a note. It's just, it's weird. It's funny. That might have had something to do with why they wanted to recut it with the guitar intro version that became, the keeper, the one that became the hit. Well, the B-side, as I said, they had the B-sides as well. This is one of those B-sides. Now, this is the first song on the album that is credited to Mick Jagger and Keith Richards. As you will hear, they were not quite established as songwriters yet. I know we poked a little bit of fun at them on the first album.
So it's not a Nankerfelge?
Well, the Nankerfeld stuff was just jams.
Oh, okay.
You know, that's really not, they didn't even consider them songs. They were made up pretty much spontaneously.
Isn't that what a song
is? Or they
were
instrumentals, you know? So when they did that, they said, we have to give credit to the whole band.
Okay.
But if they had something which was structured and, you know, goes like this, on the first album, there was really very little that was not really nothing memorable written by them. Still a little bit of struggling here. As I said, they were writing their material. They were putting it on the B side because they knew they'd get publishing credit for the sales that were happening because of their version of the A side hit.
Excellent idea.
So there you go. It worked. Well, here's one of those songs. This is called Good Times, Bad Times.
Bad times, I have my share of hard times too. Well, I lost my faith in the world, honey, when I lost you. Remember the good times we chat together. Don't you want them back again? Though these hard times bugging me now, honey, now it's a sin.
Jagger and Keith Richards taking writing credit on that one. Obviously a pretty straightforward blues number.
Yeah.
Not one that has a tremendous amount of identity to it to make it stand out, though.
Yeah, no staying power in my book.
They're still working. It's amazing how they suddenly, once they found their groove, man, it's just amazing how they suddenly jumped out as songwriters. But at this point in time, their biggest hits were written by others, including, here's the other... the other song that was an A-side hit for them that was selling as a single, it was a Bobby Womack tune called It's All Over Now.
Well, baby used to stay out all night long. She made me cry. She done me wrong. She hurt my heart. That's no lie. Tables turning now, her turn to cry. Because I used to love her, but it's all over now. Because I used to love her, but it's all over now. Well, she used to run around with every man. Turning now, her turn to cry. Because I used to love her. take me for that same old clown. Because I used to love her, but it's all over now. Because I used to love her, but it's all over now. Because I used to love her, but it's all over now.
An interesting phone call from a friend and a regular listener, Frank, who I know he listens to the show an awful lot. He was making a point how it's like pretty, you know, here, I guess he's digging here in the album, here in the Stones, and probably in a way tripping out about how old it is and about how music is so different now, how things have changed.
Yeah, well, the Grammys were just the other day. So.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny you mentioned that because as Frank was talking to me, I had to hang up, obviously, because the song was fading out. But I wanted to tell him that, you know, his comments about, you know, that and the longevity of certain artists that they have in their career and how they can, whether or not they can stay relevant. Like, you know, like, of course, Bowie's album, like I said, was number one all over the world. But if he didn't pass away, would that have been the case?
Right. Absolutely but, not.
By the same token, I mean, you know, you do have Keith Richards put out a great album, I think, anyway. Bob Dylan, as Frank said himself, you know, still puts out some great albums from time to time. The point is there's a whole, not only a generation now, but maybe even the generation before this generation, maybe even the generation before that, maybe there's three generations now of people who really just don't really give much of a damn about rock and roll.
Right.
You know, it's just grandpa music. It's one thing that I saw just this morning, speaking of the Grammys, which kind of freaked me out, is there was an after party at the Grammys by some rapper that I had never heard of. And Paul McCartney was locked out. They wouldn't let him in. Paul McCartney was there with Beck, and they wouldn't let him in the door.
That's crazy.
Paul McCartney said this, just like he's like, you know, like how, you know, famous do you have to be to get into this party?
Right.
And then he looks at Beck and he goes like, wait, we need another hit to get hip. Quick, write one.
They should have started busking at the door.
I can imagine, you know, if you're Paul McCartney and you're not cool enough by today's standards, it just shows. I mean,
wow.
You know, and then it got me to thinking, like, I'm going to go in and I'm going to play an album from 1964 tonight. This is crazy. Who's going to listen? Who's going to care? But
right.
I mean, I'm sitting here. I just hope I'm not screaming to the masses because I'm hoping that there are younger people. Because I'm hearing about people that form bands, and they said that another thing I just read recently, some kids who were in high school on Long Island.
Well, another one of the parties, after parties, ended at 1:30, so I'm just wanting you to know, you know, just to let you know what kind of partiers these people are anyway.
Oh, they're over by 1:30, saying,
yes.
Yeah, sometimes they don't even start until 2 in the morning. That's what I used to think, but anyway, I was going to say, though, I just read an article about a band that had gotten together, and it was two guys from Long Island that had discovered rock and roll. And they said that in their entire school, they were the only two guys that listened to rock and roll music. And that's what
you mean they rediscovered rock and roll.
Right. Well, they discovered through their parents' records or something
right.
that they had heard from maybe their grandfather, for all I know.
Wow.
But this is what had inspired them. And then they got together, and then and now they've got a band, and they're playing in New York City, and they got a record deal. But it's a very, very different world. It's very diverse. And I'm hoping that maybe as I'm doing a show like this, that it's somebody, maybe there is a 16-year-old out there or somewhere, plus or minus 5 years, who hears this and says, you know, that's actually pretty cool.
I'm going to get inspired.
Because the point of my doing this is I'm considering this stuff to be timeless, not dead in the water. I don't want to play albums from 1964 that sound 52 years old.
Right.
I want to play albums from 1964 that sound cool. You know, and I'm hoping that this does. Now, as I had mentioned earlier, let's get back to the music. I got up an entire side to play, and I'm eating up this this hour here. I mentioned that this was all about the Stones, you know, an EP that they put in England because they recorded 5 songs at Chess Records in Chicago. And there's 2 left to play. Side 2 opens with one of those songs, And it's kind of cool. What they use for the title of the track is the address of Chess Records. This is, if you remember, Heidi, when you and I went there, the reason I said I wanted to go there because we were on South Michigan Avenue. And I'm like, let's drive. I know where I want to go. I want to go to 2120 South Michigan Avenue. And I knew that because I knew the Rolling Stones song. And when we got there, sure enough, there we were at the old Chess studio where these songs were recorded. It's an instrumental, so it's credited to Nanker Felge, but here's 2120 South Michigan Avenue.
When the sun beats down and burns the tar upon the roof, and your shoes get so hot, wish your tired feet were fireproof. Under the boardwalk, down by the sea, on a blanket with my baby, that's where I. Under the boardwalk, out of the sun,
under the boardwalk,
we'll be having some fun.
Under the boardwalk,
people walking above,
under the boardwalk,
we were falling in love.
Under the boardwalk,
boardwalk, on the park you hear the happy sound of a carousel. You can almost taste the hot dogs and French fries they sell. Under the boardwalk, down by the sea, on a blanket with my baby, that's where I'll be.
Under the boardwalk,
out of the sun,
under the boardwalk,
we're having some fun.
Under the boardwalk,
people walking above,
under the boardwalk,
we were falling in love.
Under the boardwalk,
boardwalk.
were falling in love under the boardwalk, boardwalk.
I'd call that one of the filler tracks.
Yeah.
You know. I understand. These are great albums, but it doesn't mean that every track is great. But it's interesting, I guess, hearing the Stones doing a Drifters cover. A bit goofy.
The Sleepers
perhaps.
Make you appreciate the good stuff.
Yeah, sometimes.
Sometimes.
I mean, if this album was mostly filler, I wouldn't be choosing it. It's just, it's the fact that the Stones can go into Chess Records and play their heroes' music and play it with a panache that I'm sure that even the heroes would have been impressed. I think that's really cool. I said there's like a few originals on here. There's actually two more. There's only three songs that are credited to Jagger Richards on the entire album, only three. Here are two of them back to back. One of them was a B-side of the 45. The other one is one of those leftover tracks from England. The first is called Congratulations, which is really funny. They spell that word wrong on the album title. They spelled it with a congrad with a D.
Oh.
As if it's graduation or something. But Congratulations, followed by Grown Up Wrong.
Some more.
Quick two back-to-back originals there. This is before the Jagger Richard genius really kicked in, as you can tell.
Right.
They're working toward it. They're sitting in rooms. They're writing songs, hit or miss at this point in time. They're no, you know, Lennon McCartney yet, but they're inspired by Lennon McCartney. So in 1965, that's when the wellspring really opened for them. This album, though, released in October of 1964. It's called 12 by 5. We've been playing the entire album. I've got one more song that was recorded at that Chess record session out of the five that caused the English EP to be created, called 5x5, the five songs that were recorded at Chess in 1964. Here is that last of the five. This is called If You Need Me.
If you need me, why don't you call me? Say if you need me, why don't you call me? Don't wait too long. When things go wrong, I'll be there where I belong. Said if you want me, why don't you send for me? Said if you
And just like that, we complete the entire album.
Incredible.
We played all 12 by 5.
Got it in.
Second album by the Rolling Stones, October 1964. Now, we will be back next Wednesday. I think it will be the last album next week in our 1964 series. And then we'll move on. Don't forget that on Fridays, the How Music Changed thing, we are covering Simon and Garfunkel. And while Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel, including solo careers, were still in the band era, around their third album, so you can join us for that. It's a lot of fun history there. And with the time that's left over, what I wanted to do is I figured I'd play the hit version, the electric version of Time Is On My Side, and we'll go out with that. Why not? Since it's relevant to what we've done. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for all the phone calls, too. It was really cool. Everybody kept me busy for this show, and I appreciate the positivity. The feedback's awesome. See you Friday. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
You wanna be free, but you